With the Lady Luck pulled helplessly aboard the huge star destroyer by a tractor beam, Lando and Senator Miyatamiya had no choice but to follow the six stormtroopers who clumped down the corridor in perfect unison in front of them. Six more stormtroopers brought up the rear. The group came to a halt at a door marked Secondary Command Room, and Lando and Miyatamiya were ordered to enter. The room was sparsely decorated, a command chair in the middle. Standing beside the chair was a hard-faced man wearing Major's insignia, and rising calmly from the chair itself, Lando felt his heart seize up in his chest. No, no, it couldn't be.
"Good day, gentlemen," Grand Admiral Thrawn said. "Please come inside."
With difficulty, Miyatamiya stirred himself and moved forward. Numbly, Lando followed. Finally, Miyatamiya spoke.
"You look remarkably well, Admiral. I must confess to my surprise at seeing you here."
Thrawn smiled faintly.
"My reappearance has surprised many others, Senator Miyatamiya, and will surprise a great many more in the days to come. However, the reason I asked you aboard..."
Lando interrupted.
"How did you survive the Bilbringi shipyards? The Imperial report said you were dead."
The Major took a step toward him.
"You will not interrupt the Grand Admiral."
Thrawn raised a hand.
"Peace, Major."
He turned to Lando.
"My survival was due to a unique combination of several factors, Captain. You'll forgive me if I withhold the details."
He turned back to Miyatamiya.
"As I was about to say, Senator, my message is quite simple. You've recently become aware that a group of Bothans were involved in the attempted genocide on Kamus. I've come to offer my aid in bringing those guilty to justice."
Miyatamiya inclined his head to the side as if listening to a distant sound.
"How?"
"By identifying the guilty parties, of course. If President Gavrissom truly wishes this crisis resolved, he need only ask for my assistance."
The red eyes glittered.
"I'd advise that you relay my offer to the rebellion leadership quickly. I don't believe you have much time to spare before this crisis blows up. Commander, escort them back to their ship."
Lando spoke quickly as the stormtroopers came up behind him.
"A question, Admiral, if I may. I saw you once from a distance while you were in the company of the smuggler Talon Card. Can you tell me where that was and why you were there?"
Thrawn's face hardened. Fortunately, Flim had actually read the detailed reports Tierce had written up on his time with Thrawn.
"If this is a test, Captain, you've chosen your topic unwisely. I spent a great deal of time during my recovery considering the proper payment to be exacted from Talon Card for his many betrayals. I do not like to be reminded of him, except to consider how short his remaining life is going to be. You're referring to my meeting with Card at his base on the planet Merkur, when I was searching for Luke Skywalker. You and someone else, General Solo, I assume, watched our landing from within the forest."
Lando felt a cold chill run up his back.
"You knew we were there?" "I knew someone was there. As I'm sure you know, select stormtroopers have extra sensor equipment built into their helmets. One of them caught a reflective glint from the macro binoculars you were using. Does that satisfy your curiosity, Captain?"
Lando managed a nod.
"Yes, Admiral, it does."
The Diamalan senator finished his report and sat down again on the witness bench beside Lando. Leia suddenly felt very cold. The impossible had happened. Grand Admiral Thrawn had returned. The Lakashian senator broke the stunned silence, her high-pitched voice making the chamber's sound system squeal.
"We are many. The Empire are few. Let us gather together and move against it. And this time, let us not stop until we have utterly destroyed it."
If you think that's even an option any more, then you're a fool, the Sronk senator countered. I saw what Grand Admiral Thrawn did to my world's defenses 10 standard cycles ago, and with nothing more than 7 Katana fleet dreadnoughts as his weapons. He wouldn't have announced his return if he weren't prepared to receive the full slamming brunt of our closed right hand.
President Gavrissom cut in.
Please, all of you. We of the Council certainly understand your concerns and your fears. However, at this point, I would urge you to ponder this news without jumping either to hasty conclusions or premature actions.
Jik Dixano, the Aishori senator, was on his feet, his whole body trembling with the physical rage which, in his species, always accompanied deep thought.
President Gavrissom, I would speak. I wish merely to remind the chamber that we have only the Diamalan senator's word that he did indeed face this throne.
Leia found herself on her feet. On behalf of Captain Carizian, I resent the implications of that statement, Senator. Lando was there as well, and he's been a stalwart friend and ally both of the New Republic and the Rebel Alliance.
The Aishori glared first at Leia, then at Mia Tamia.
As I have already pointed out, the message that was allegedly delivered by this supposed throne conveniently supports the Diamalan stance on the Bothan issue. Coincidence or careful manipulation?
Lando spoke up.
The man in Thrawn's uniform knew about my visit to Merkur 10 years ago. The only people who were there at that time were Thrawn and his stormtrooper escort. Dixano shot back. Not true. By your own statement, former General Solo was also there, as was the smuggler Talon Card.
Leia glanced at Lando. Card wouldn't be part of anything like this.
The Aishori drew himself up a little taller, a finger stabbing out accusingly toward Leia.
Wouldn't he? Counselor Organa Solo, tell us, where exactly do you stand on the Bothan issue? Do you believe that full justice should be demanded of the Bothans? Or do you, like the Diamalan senator, prefer to allow their horrific crime to go unpunished?
We know where she stands, another angry voice called out. Did not her bonded mate Han Solo fire on a peaceable protest at the clan's building on Bothawi?
Gavrissom broke in sternly.
That charge has not been proved, and your accusations are uncalled for. Be seated, please.
But the damage had already been done. In a single masterful stroke, Dixano had not only cast serious doubt on Miatamia's story, but had managed to undermine Leia's credibility as well. Infighting, suspicions, divisiveness. Yes, it was indeed Thrawn's style. Leia pointed out the canopy as Han set their Incom T-81 down on the Orowood Tower's third-level airspeeder pad. There's Lando, over there, by the entryway. Han grunted, shutting down the repulsor lifts.
Yeah, I see him. I still think this is a bad idea, Leia.
I know you do. Leia looked past the lighted landing area at the darkened shrubbery perimeter beyond it. And I can't say I completely disagree with you, but Lando insisted on coming. Popping the canopy, Han growled.
You'd just better hope Dixano didn't get wind of it and have someone follow him here. You'd get someone yelling secret meeting, and we'll all have had it.
Lando had insisted on a private meeting with Han, Leia, and Card at the Organa Solo family's Orowood Tower retreat on Coruscant. Han and Leia had chosen this building for its spectacular view of the Minari Mountains, its 38 floors of sumptuous architecture painstakingly crafted to replicate the Alderaan style. The turbolift deposited Han, Leia, and Lando in the lush garden that comprised the 30th floor lobby. No one was visible among the fronds and rockpile water trickles.
Bakimch, Leia called softly. I am here, Lady Vader.
The Nogri warrior led the way to their apartment. Card was lounging in a plush, self-molding contour chair in the apartment's conversation circle, a data pad in one hand and a glass of amber liquid in the other. He greeted them and turned to Lando.
Hello, Calrissian. Nice to see you again.
Lando gave him a curious glance.
Yes, though you may not think so when we tell you why we're here.
After Lando finished speaking, Card turned his glass in his hand.
You're sure about all this?
I'm sure,
Lando said positively.
I searched through what we've got out of the old Imperial archives and found every recording they had of Thrawn. There wasn't much, but it definitely looked and sounded like the man I saw.
Han threw a surreptitious look at Leia.
Which doesn't mean it couldn't be a trick.
If Card's attitude was all an act, if he was behind this Thrawn sighting of Lando's, then she ought to have pulled proof of it from his mind by now. But her face had the same grim expression that had been there when Lando started his story. Han had thought they were being subtle enough, apparently not. Card, studying his glass, said,
I take it I'm under some suspicion here, and not just from the Ashuri and their allies.
Han saw Leia's lip twitch.
I'm sorry. For whatever it's worth, I had no doubts myself.
Card shifted his gaze to Lando.
All right, then, let's begin with the assumption we're all hoping is true, namely that you were the victim of a clever trick. First question, how was it done?
Han sat forward.
It shouldn't be all that hard, some facial surgery to make this guy look like Thrawn. Then just add in some skin, hair, and eye coloring.
Lando shook his head.
What about the voice?
Now, voices can be fake, too, you know.
Card frowned. Could it have been a clone?
Thrawn could easily have taken one or more of the cloning tanks out of Mount Tantis before it was destroyed.
Leia sighed.
I've been wondering about that, too. It would also explain where the clones Luke sensed at Iphigen came from.
Card set his glass down on the low table beside his chair.
All right, then. Let's assume the worst case, that really was Thrawn you saw, and that he's back and out for blood. Why make an appearance now? And why just to you and Senator Miatamia instead of all of Coruscant?
Leia pursed her lips. Probably to create exactly the situation we're now in. The tension level in the Senate has jumped straight to the ceiling. Card was eyeing Lando closely, Han noticed suddenly, as closely as Lando was eyeing him.
Card said, So, what do you suggest as your next move?
Lando spoke emphatically.
Our next move is to get this blasted commerce issue out of the way so we can focus on Thrawn. And that means finding out exactly who the guilty Bothans were.
Card kept his voice studiously calm.
That could be a problem. As far as I know, the Imperials have only two complete sets of records left. One at the Ubiquitrate base, Yaga Minor, the other at the current Imperial capital on Bastion.
I don't suppose you happen to know where Bastion is, Leia said.
I'm afraid not. Bastion's proper name is one secret the Imperials have managed to keep. Lando said, I wasn't necessarily talking about the Imperials. I was thinking someone else might have the records we're looking for.
Han blinked at Lando. Suddenly, his insistence that Han join them here tonight for their talk with Card was taking on a whole new dimension.
You mean that Card...
Card interrupted angrily.
I don't have the records, Calrissian. I know that.
Lando's voice was heavy with significance.
I was referring to a different source entirely.
For a pair of heartbeats, the two men continued to gaze at each other.
Card abruptly got to his feet. Leia, Calrissian and I need to have a short talk. Is there a place where we can have some privacy?
You can use the boys' bedroom. Leia pointed down the hallway. Last door on the left.
As soon as they shut the door behind them, Card spoke. We had an agreement, Calrissian.
Which I haven't broken,
Lando said, his voice sounding a little defensive.
Really? You've as good as told them there's a secret here. Do you really want them to start digging?
Calrissian said tartly.
They've got more important things to worry about. And to be honest, I never understood why you were so obsessed about secrecy on this thing in the first place. So Georgius Cardus was once a competitor of yours.
Keep your voice down.
And Cardus wasn't a competitor. He was something else entirely. Fine. Look, Card, I don't know what went on between you and Cardus.
What I do know is that we're facing Grand Admiral Thrawn here. I'm talking about the genius who came this close to taking down the whole New Republic 10 years ago. Whatever Thrawn's got planned, he has to be counting on the Commas issue to keep us divided. And don't forget, he specifically said he'd be coming after you.
Card murmured. Scare words.
I don't remember Thrawn ever relying on scare words,
Lando said.
But I know that if Thrawn isn't stopped, he'll be the one who eventually comes knocking at Cardus's retirement home. Give me a copy of the route and I'll go find him myself.
Don't be absurd, you and the Lady Luck wouldn't last 2 days alone in the Cathol outback.
Who says I'll be going alone? I thought I'd ask General Bel Iblis and the Peregrine along.
An edge of exasperation colored Card's tone.
That would be the absolute worst thing you could do. You bring a capital warship into the Exocron system, and Cardus will either go completely underground or blow it out of the sky. You don't know him the way I do.
No, Calrissian agreed quietly. I don't. There was a long waiting silence.
You should never have given up on your con man origins, Calrissian,
Card said at last.
You're far too good at it. All right. I'll go.
Okay, I give up, Han said, a puzzled look on his face. What's their big secret? You know I can't dig things out of their minds, Leia reminded him. It's unethical with enemies, let alone friends.
You Jedi are no fun sometimes.
Lady Vader,
a gravelly voice cut in. Leia jumped. As usual, she hadn't heard or sensed the Nogri's approach. What is it, Garak?
Perhaps trouble, he growled. The sentry on the rooftop is not responding to his comlink. We have sent a team to check on him, but until we know otherwise, we must assume an intruder is attempting to break in. If there is an intruder, we will need to seek him out.
As he spoke, Lando appeared around the corner, followed by Card, followed by a tall, slender woman in a gray combat suit. Don't bother, the woman said quietly. I'm here. The shock of the unexpected voice behind Calrissian sent him jumping half a meter into the air, his gun hand getting momentarily tangled in his cloak before he could haul his blaster free. One of the Nogri had already appeared and had his own blaster trained on the woman. Leia's serene voice broke the stupefied silence. Who are you? She said to the mysterious woman. My name is Shaeda Dukal, the woman said. And I'm not here to hurt any of you. Organa Solo nodded. I know. My danger sense would have reacted otherwise.
How did you get in here?
Garak snarled. Shaeda, apparently an expert climber, explained that she had scaled the building and dropped down to the 30th floor window, where she had entered and hid in the boy's bedroom. Lando and Card looked at each other, then glared at the woman. She must have overheard their entire conversation. Shaeda looked directly at Leia. I wanted to talk to you. This was the only way I could do it. Card spoke up.
Shaeda hasn't just walked in off the street, or rather dangled in off the roof. She's chief bodyguard for our smuggler friend Mazik.
Shaeda corrected him firmly. Former bodyguard.
When she continued, the words seemed carefully rehearsed.
I want to join the New Republic. I have a number of abilities you'll find useful. Combat and surveillance, escort and security. I also know about the Commas document. And I know that the only way you're going to get out of the mess you're in is to get hold of an intact copy of it. I can help.
Out of the corner of her eye, Leia saw Calrissian throw a significant look at Card.
I've got an idea. Why don't we send her with Card?
Solo cocked his head toward the smuggler chief.
And just where is it Card's going?
Card's eyes were on Shaeda.
Something Calrissian asked me to do. According to some of my sources, it's possible there's a copy of the complete Commas document out there that's not in Imperial hands. I'm going to see if I can get hold of it.
Han and Leia exchanged startled glances.
Why didn't you tell us this before? Leia demanded.
Because up till now, none of this has been any of my business.
Card looked at Lando.
But a new factor has been stirred into the mix.
Organa Solo hunched her shoulders as if a sudden cold draft had blown across her back.
Thrawn.
Card nodded soberly.
Thrawn.
He looked at Shaeta. And yes, I would be greatly pleased to have Shaeta's assistance, if she's willing, of course.
Leia smiled, a smile that was shaded with tension, but a smile nonetheless. May the Force be with you.
The alarm came in the middle of the night. Wedge Antilles jerked awake and struggled to remember where he was. As per orders, and one of General Bel Iblis's hunches, he and the rest of Rogue Squadron were sleeping in their X-wings. The General's hunch had apparently paid off. He slapped at the alarm switch and keyed the comm. Antilles. Commander Paris's voice snapped back.
Full scramble. We've got a panic call in from Bothawi.
Wedge hit his engine pre-start.
Okay, Rogues. You all heard the man. Let's get him in the air.
There was a chorus of acknowledgements and the whine of engine pre-starts. Wedge asked,
What is it, another clan-building riot?
Paris replied grimly.
According to the Bothans, a Larisan attack force is on the way.
Wedge blinked. A Larisan attack force?
That's what they say. A full-class war fleet. Isn't it lucky for the Bothans that we rogues and our dazzling reputation just happen to be only two systems away from them?
Wedge frowned. It was lucky, now that he thought about it. Suspiciously lucky, in fact. Paris, can you pull the original order that brought us here?
Already pulled. According to Coruscant, the Daitani government specifically asked for General Bel Iblis to mediate a dispute with their resident non-Tani workers.
All too soon, they had reached their destination. As the rest of the X-Wings came out of hyperspace, Wedge barked out orders.
Form up. Pick up your long-range scanners.
But Rogue Two observed tightly,
I don't think that'll be necessary.
Wedge grimaced.
No, I guess not.
It was a Larisan attack force, all right. Spread out across the sky, directly ahead of the incoming X-Wings, were six capital ships, all of alien design and manufacture, but each nearly the size of a New Republic assault frigate. 20 smaller ships filled the gaps between them, with at least 5 squadrons of starfighter-class ships forming a defense perimeter around the whole group. Wedge studied the group. They were well outside Bothawi's planetary shield, beyond the range of any ground-based weapons the defenders were likely to have. He couldn't remember whether or not the Bothans had any orbital battle platforms circling their homeworld, but if they did, none of them were on this side of the planet at the moment. Which pretty much left Rogue Squadron all by itself out here. 12 X-Wings and a reputation. He cleared his throat and keyed the comm for a broadband common frequency.
This is General Wedge Antilles and the New Republic unit Rogue Squadron, calling the Larisan Task Force. You're encroaching without permission on Bothan space. Please, state your intentions.
A melodious voice responded.
This matter is none of your concern, Rogue Squadron. It is a private dispute between the Larisan and Bothan governments.
Wedge glanced at his scanners. No sign yet of Bel Iblis and the Peregrine.
May I ask the nature of this dispute?
Death and resolution. The death of 2 Larisai at the hands of the Bothans, and the Bothan refusal to resolve them.
Wedge grimaced, keying to the Rogue's private frequency.
Any idea what he's talking about?
Rogue 11 answered.
Hang on, I'm checking the records. Yeah, here it is. There were 2 Larisai killed in that riot at the Combined Clans building.
Thanks. Wedge switched back.
Larisan, Commander, I understand your anger over your loss. What is it you want the Bothans to do in restitution?
The alien responded crisply.
Larisan law is very precise. Claw for claw, horn for horn, life for life. 1 guilty for himself, or 10 innocent of his tribe.
A cold chill ran down Wedge's back.
What do you mean, 10 innocent?
The Bothans have refused to turn over to us those members of the clans who killed 2 unarmed Larisai. 2 lives will thus be paid by 20.
Then Wedge heard Rogue 4 say quietly,
Uh-oh. Vector 36 by 41.
Wedge looked. Just coming into view around the planetary horizon was a small space station. Rogue Four continued grimly.
It's a low-orbit zero-G crystal manufacturing plant, Mon Cal design. If I recall correctly, the normal worker complement is 15 to 22.
Wedge bit back a curse, keying for private frequency.
Intercept course. I want us between the station and the Larissae.
He switched the comm back to the alien commander as he threw power to the drive.
You must understand that we can't simply stand by and permit you to kill innocent people. General Garmbel Iblis will be here soon. Perhaps he can mediate.
There can be no mediation. The law is the law, and its demands must be fulfilled.
There was a click, and the conversation was over. Wedge muttered under his breath as he keyed back to the Rogue's frequency.
Maybe not, but we can sure give it a good try. All right, Rogues, time to get serious. Lock S-foils into attack position.
He reached for the control.
No!
Rogue 9, Corin Horn, snapped suddenly.
Don't lock S-foils!
Wedge paused, his hand hovering over the switch.
Corin, what's up?
I don't know. All I know is that I sensed danger when you ordered the S-foil lock. I'm running a diagnostic now, but so far I haven't found anything.
Is this one of your...
Wedge hesitated, not wanting to ask about the other's budding Jedi skills, even on a secure channel.
I think so, yes.
Wedge keyed back to the main Rogue frequency.
Everyone hold course.
He turned his X-Wing toward Rogue 9.
You especially, Rogue 9. I'm coming in close.
A minute later, Wedge and Horn were flying in tight parade flight formation, the twin lasers on Wedge's starboard wingtips nearly brushing the underside of Rogue 9's fuselage. Wedge eased in another couple of centimeters.
All right, you've got my starboard flank, I've got your port side. Give it a fast look and see if you can spot anything that shouldn't be there. If you don't, we'll switch sides.
No need.
Corin's voice was taut.
There it is. A thin cylinder, running vertically between the S-foils, just forward of the laser power line.
Wedge looked closer.
You've got one, too.
Now that he knew where to look, the add-on was obvious.
10 to 1, the whole squadron's been booby-trapped.
Rogue 2 spoke up.
All right, so we don't lock S-foils. We can still fire, can't we?
Wedge frowned at the innocent-looking cylinder.
I don't think we should try it. In fact, Corin, roll starboard a couple of degrees, will you?
Rogue 9's fuselage rolled slowly. Wedge spoke again, thoroughly disgusted now.
I was right. The top of the cylinder's got two branches. One runs into the wing's servo line. The other looks like it feeds right into the laser power line. My guess is that either locking or firing will knock out the lasers. Or worse.
Rogue 12 cursed.
Has to have been those two Larissae and the Daitani maintenance crew who were always hanging around. So what do we do? Try to bluff them?
Wedge looked out at the Larissan ships. They were on the move now, starting to form up around the manufacturing station, speeding helplessly toward them.
No point. They already know we're out of it.
And so they watched, helplessly, as the Larissae set about systematically demolishing the station, taking their toll of 20 innocent lives in payment for the guilty. By the time the rest of the Peregrine Task Force arrived, it was all over. Or, perhaps more accurately, it had just begun.
It's finally started, Leia announced bleakly as she locked the apartment door behind her and sank down onto the couch next to Han. The shooting has started.
Yeah, I heard.
Han slipped his arm around her.
What's the Senate doing about it?
Mostly trying to figure out what they can do.
Han shook his head in frustration.
What's the figure? The Larissae slaughtered 21 Bothans, not to mention shredding a perfectly good space station. Can't Gavrasam just order the Larissan government brought up on charges?
I wish it were that easy, Han.
Unfortunately, 3 of the High Councillors have already stated they'll vote against any such resolution, on the grounds that we haven't made similar reparation demands on the Bothan government over the destruction of Kamas. She sighed. 12 other governments have filed notice with the Senate that they're going to be presenting their own list of demands against the Bothans. And now the Diamala and Mon Calamari have announced they're sending ships to defend Bothawi against any further aggression. Han whistled under his breath. You're kidding. What kind of ships?
Big ones. Everyone says they have the interests of commerce and justice at heart, but a lot of them are just using that as a battle cry while they settle old scores.
Han looked at her directly. So what do we do?
Only one thing we can do. We have to take the excuse away from them. And that means getting the names of the actual Bothans who were involved and putting them on trial.
There was a subtle change in Han's emotions.
Yeah, well, cards trying.
Leia smiled at him. You know, I sometimes think Card is sort of what you would have been if you hadn't joined the rebellion. Han grinned.
Maybe. Except for the beard.
Thank the Force for small favors. The scouts had spent the past 28 hours sweeping the system. When they returned, they brought the report Admiral Pelion had been expecting. Except for the Camara itself, the Pesiton system, where Pelion had asked Vermal to have Bel Iblis meet him, was as deserted as a region of space could be. Captain Ardiff came up beside Pelion on the Star Destroyer's command walkway.
Offhand, sir, I'd say Bel Iblis turned down your offer. Perhaps.
Pelion gazed out the viewport at the stars.
It's also possible that my suggested timetable was a little optimistic. General Bel Iblis may be having difficulty convincing the New Republic hierarchy that it would be to their benefit to talk to me.
A note of asperity crept into Ardiff's voice.
The point remains that Colonel Vermal went out to deliver your message and never returned. Why?
I don't know. I take it you have a theory.
Ardiff nodded.
Yes, sir. The same theory I've had since before we left Yaga Minor. I think Vermal learned something, either from Bel Iblis directly or else he overheard something someone else said, that whatever he heard made it necessary for Bel Iblis to lock him up where he couldn't communicate with you. That at best, we're wasting our time. And at worst, we're walking into a trap.
Pelion considered, then spoke quietly.
It's still a worthwhile gamble, Captain. We'll give Bel Iblis a few days to show up. After that...
Admiral Pelion, the sensor officer called from the starboard crew pit. Incoming ships, sir. Looks like 8 of them coming in on Vector 164/53. 4 are Corellian gunships. The big one's a Kaloth battlecruiser. Looks like it's been heavily modified. 3 are Telgorn pacifier-class assault boats. IDs... inconclusive, Ardiff demanded.
What do you mean, inconclusive?
Their IDs don't match anything in the registry. I'm running an overlay check to see if I can unravel them.
Ardiff peered darkly out the viewport.
Disguised ships.
Pelion ordered, Communications officer. Transmit our identification and ask for theirs.
Identification transmitted. No response. Another voice cut in. Admiral, incoming ships have reconfigured into attack formation.
Ardiff's voice was hard.
I think, Admiral, that we have Bel Iblis's answer.
Pelion turned to him.
Captain, you'd best prepare the Camara for combat.
The incoming ships were visible now, tiny specks, rapidly growing larger.
Pelion gave the order that there should be no fire from the Camara. Whatever happens here, I want it clear that we did nothing to provoke hostilities.
For a long minute, he and Ardiff stood together in silence and waited.
The incoming ships grew steadily larger, and suddenly they were speeding low across the Camara, raking the Star Destroyer's upper surface with a blaze of turbolaser fire.
And then they were gone, branching to either side around the command superstructure and pulling for the safety of distance. Ardiff let out a hissing breath.
I think that proves their intentions, Admiral. Request permission to attack.
Permission granted, but with turbo lasers only.
Ardiff gave him a sharp look.
No fighters?
Not yet.
Pelion searched the sky for the attackers.
I have something else planned for the Preybirds.
Ardiff threw a quick glance around them.
Admiral, I respectfully urge you to reconsider. That battlecruiser is packing some serious weaponry.
I understand your concerns, Captain, but I have my reasons.
The attackers had completed their circling and turned toward the Chimera. The sensor officer called, "Here they come! Looks like they're going to do a crossways run this time." The attackers swept toward them, weapons blazing. The Chimera's turbo lasers answered, and for a few seconds, the sky outside the bridge became a dazzling display of green and red fire. And then the attackers were gone, clawing again for distance, and the Star Destroyer's awesome weaponry fell silent. Beside Pelion, Ardiff muttered, "They're trying to knock out all the turbo lasers in Quadrant 1. Once they do that, that battlecruiser can just sit off the bow and blast away at the hull." Pelion nodded.
"That does seem to be their intention. Let's see if we can rewrite the script a bit. Colonel Bass, order one Preybird squadron to launch on my command. Their attack vector..."
He paused, following the attackers with his eyes. They had reached the furthest point of their curve now and were starting to swing back around for another pass.
"Attack vector 23 by 7. They're to stay on that vector in tight parade flight formation until otherwise ordered."
Captain Ardiff clearly did not believe his ears.
"Parade flight formation, sir?"
Pelion explained.
"The shield overlap will help protect them from enemy fire."
"Not well enough. Not against a Kaloth battlecruiser at close-in range."
Still, Pelion remained calm.
"With any luck, they won't need to get that close."
A few seconds later, the Preybirds appeared around the edge of the hull, a clump of close-formation drive trail, arrow wings straight out toward the incoming attackers. Pelion called the order.
"Stand by, number 8 proton torpedo cluster. All 15 torpedoes to fire in 3x5 sequence along vector 23x7.
The background hum in the bridge suddenly seemed to falter.
"Sir?"
the fire control officer asked hesitantly.
"That's the same vector..."
"As the Preybirds. Yes, I know, Lieutenant. You have your orders."
"Yes, sir."
"Fire torpedoes on my command only."
Pelion watched the Preybirds streaking toward the incoming attackers.
"Almost there. Colonel Bass, order the Preybirds to perform a full-speed Sagari Blossom maneuver on my command. Lieutenant, fire proton torpedoes."
From beneath the Chimera's bow, a tight column of torpedo trails appeared. 5 groups of 3 torpedoes each, driving hard directly toward the now distant drive trails of the Preybirds. Abruptly, Ardiff gave a small snort of understanding.
"Ah, of course."
"Indeed."
Pelion watched the departing torpedoes closely, painfully aware of the slight second timing that was required.
"Colonel Bass, now."
For a single agonizing heartbeat, nothing happened. Then, with parade flight precision, the Preybirds broke out of their clustered formation. Turning sharply out and away from their original vector, they formed a brief, stylized, Sagari flower shape as they curved back around toward the Chimera. The enemy turbo laser fire that had been pounding away at their overlapped shields split in response, swinging outward to track each of the individual fighters. And with a flash of brilliant light, the first 3 proton torpedoes roared through the undefended center area, blazed their way directly between the 2 gunships in the lead, and impacted squarely against the bow of the battlecruiser. Even from the Chimera's distance, the consternation among the attacking ships was instantly apparent and utterly useless. And as the bunched ships clawed desperately to get some distance between them... the second torpedo group hit, blowing out an impressive cloud of shattered hull metal and transparasteel. The third group must have run into a piece of the debris from that second blast. All 3 torpedoes blew prematurely, sending one of the dodging gunships corkscrewing violently into the night with a ruptured hull. By the time the last 3 torpedoes had spent their fury, the battle was over. The battlecruiser had been reduced to rubble, and the other ships were running for their lives. Ardiff spoke with admiration and embarrassment mixing in his voice.
"Brilliantly done, Admiral. I'm sorry if I sounded..."
Pelion answered briskly.
"Understood, Captain. Believe it or not, I've been in your place myself.
Thank you, sir. Shall I send a team out to retrieve the debris? It might tell us who that was.
Pelion nodded. Go ahead and send a team. But I can tell you right now that it wasn't General Bel Iblis.
Really? How can you be that sure?
First things first. While the team is retrieving the debris, I want you to run the record of the battle through the predictor.
Ardiff smiled with understanding. That's why you let them do that second run against us, isn't it? So that there would be enough data for the predictor to analyze.
Exactly. It didn't work very well at figuring out the tactics of a given enemy. Let's see if it can work in reverse, to figure out the enemy from the given tactics.
And you're sure it wasn't Bel Iblis? Ardiff asked.
Pelion looked out at the glowing cloud. Have you ever heard of an A-Wing slash, Captain?
I don't think so, sir.
It's a New Republic battle technique. It requires highly precise timing, which is why it's hardly ever used. A group of starfighters, X-Wings usually, heads directly toward the defense line guarding a capital ship. At the last second, the X-Wings disengage, veering around and away.
Rather like what our prey birds just did.
Pelion nodded. Exactly as our prey birds just did. The defender's natural reaction, of course, is to assume the attackers are attempting a flanking maneuver and veer to follow and engage. But what they don't realize until it's too late is that a group of A-Wings has been flying directly behind the X-Wings, hidden by the X-Wings themselves and their drive glow. By the time they spot that second wave, they're too far out of line to block them. And the A-Wings have a clear run through to the now undefended ship.
Ardiff thought about it. Clever enough. What does this have to do with Bel Iblis?
Pelion smiled tightly. I was at the battle where he invented it.
Ardiff sobered. So, this was someone from the Empire?
Or someone from the New Republic. We know there are factions on our side who don't want peace. I imagine they have their counterparts on the other.
Probably, Ardiff said. So, what do we do now?
Pelion sighed. Whoever ordered that attack wanted us to think Bel Iblis was behind it. His purpose, therefore, must have been to drive us away from here before Bel Iblis could arrive.
And so we stay? Ardiff asked.
So we stay. At least, a while.
Ardiff pursed his lips. You realize, of course, that our unknown opponent may attack again.
Pelion turned again to look out at the fiery debris.
Let him try.